the meeting to order.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Crum?
Here.
Ellwanger?
Here.
Fraz?
Here.
Kozlowski?
Here.
McKenzie?
Here.
McCann?
Here.
Meter?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
St. Dennis?
Here.
Consent agenda. Item A is the approval of the minutes from the August 20th, 2012 Boyne City Planning Commission meeting.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Item number four, hearing citizens present on non-agenda items. Is there anyone here on about something that's not on the agenda? Okay, moving on. Scott, do we have any reports of officers, boards, or committee committees? Item number six is unfinished business. We don't have any of that. So, seven is new business. We have a public hearing, which is review of the conditional use permit for Kirkland Products. Two things I want to do first. Since most of us don't attend a public hearing every day, I want to go through the process for a public hearing. And then I also am going to read the rules that are on the back of the agendas that you picked up outside. First, I will ask Scott to present the staff report for this public hearing item. Then I'll open the public hearing. I will give the project owner, Kirkland Products, I will recognize them to make their presentation, and then it will be open for public comment. Audience members will be invited to comment and reminded to follow the rules. Correspondence that we have received will be made a part of the record. And I will allow Kirkland Products an opportunity to respond and answer questions that might come up during the public comment. And at that time, also, the commission members will be able to ask their questions to further clarify statements that were made during the public comment. Then I'll close the public hearing. Then it's time for commission deliberation and action. So now, the rules for the public hearing, they're on the back of the agendas that were out in the hall, if you have those. Number one, public comments will be received once the hearing is open to the public. The public comment portion of the meeting is the only time when comments will be permitted by the public. The public comment period is designated for comments only. Where appropriate, the Planning Commission Chair may direct a question, comment, or opinion to the appropriate person to respond. Each speaker must state his or her name and address prior to speaking. Each speaker during the public comment period is limited to speak one time, 5 minutes in length, which Pat will be keeping track of. Speakers may be allowed to speak a second time at the discretion of the chair, once everyone else has been allowed to speak once. Comments by speakers must be addressed to the Planning Commission. Attendees may not address the Planning Commission unless recognized by the chair. Discussion between speakers and attendees of the public meeting or hearing is prohibited. A speaker may disagree or support with prior speakers in comments directed to the Planning Commission. Comments must be related to the public hearing. Speakers should present their remarks in a courteous manner and may not make personal comments about public officials, residents, or others. And number nine is just all about treating each other with respect. A person who disregards these rules and disturbs the peace at the meeting may be asked to leave.
I do have to recuse myself. I do have a conflict of interest, so I wanted to make a note of that.
Is there any action you need to take for?
Has that conflict of interest been discussed?
Do you want to identify what that conflict is?
I have a conflict of interest. I am a money lender in the project.
Here's an economic time to...
Do you want to take your money?
No, I'm just going to...
Okay.
Thank you. All right, Scott, staff report, please.
In November of 2008, the Planning Commission reviewed the application from Kirtland Products LLC for a conditional use and development plan approval to manufacture wood fuel pellets at Long Altair Drive. At that meeting, the Planning Commission decided three issues. The first issue was a finding that the production of wood pellets could be allowed as a conditional use in the planned industrial district. In accordance with the requirements of the Boyne City Zoning Ordinance, Section 1430-0, the finding was made that the proposed use was similar to allowed uses in the district, and the proposed use was classified as a conditional use. As a conditional use, it is subject to a stricter level of review, and the applicant needs to show that any potential adverse impacts of the use would be addressed, and conditions may be attached to the approval to mitigate any adverse impacts. The Planning Commission then reviewed the application and the conditional use requirements of Boyne City Zoning Ordinance Section 2.70 and made a determination that the use as proposed could meet the requirements for a conditional use provided the submittal and approval of a final development plan. The Planning Commission then reviewed the submitted preliminary development plan and approved the preliminary development plan with conditions. In November of 2009, a final development plan was submitted to the Planning Commission and the plan was approved with condition. In 2010, an application to amend the approved development plan was submitted, and the proposed amendment to the plan was approved by the Planning Commission. On May 21st, the proposed amendments to the plan, on May 21st, 2011, the zoning permit to construct the plant as approved, as per the approved site plan as amended, was issued. The applications submitted by Kirtland Products in the minutes of the Planning Commission meetings for the November 17, 2008, November 16, 2009, November 15, 2010 were attached to your packets for your review. Discussion. When considering this application, one of the primary concerns the Planning Commission had about the proposal was the potential for noise. At the November 2008 meeting, there was considerable discussion about the noise that could be produced by the facility and how it would be mitigated. Kirtland indicated that the loudest piece of equipment on the site would be the hammer mill, and they would be able to mitigate the noise produced by the hammer mill in a manner as shown in the following graph. That one's not as legible. I can get a little better copy up here. So that shows what you presented to the Planning Commission in there. Original packet. During the explanation about noise and in response to questions from the Planning Commission, Kirtland representatives indicated that there was equipment in the Lexamar facility that produced noise at similar levels to what could be expected by their equipment, and that the noise from their equipment could be mitigated by placing the equipment inside a decoupled building. To give the Planning Commission a relative comparison on the noise that could be expected from the plant, Kirtland indicated that the noise produced by the plant would be no louder than Lexamar. When questioned specifically about what the loudest piece of equipment would be, Kirtland indicated that the backup signal on the loader would be the loudest. Based on these representations and assurances, the Planning Commission was satisfied the noise produced by the plant could and would be mitigated and approved the preliminary development plan. In the fall of 2009, Kirtland submitted a final development plan for review and approval. The plan was reviewed at the November 16, 2009 meeting of the Planning Commission. In regards to the mitigation of noise, the final development plan submitted to the Planning Commission by Kirtland indicated some changes to the sound abatement measures that were initially proposed in the preliminary plan. The proposed changes and methods for sound abatement were described by Kirtland representatives on page 12 of the Kirtland Products LLC zoning and planning proposal, November 16, 2009, and as follows. Landscaping slash sound abatement. In our last proposal, the plan was to have most of the operating equipment outside, with just the pelleting and packaging equipment inside. To address noise, we plan to construct decoupled wall buildings around all equipment exceeding 40 decibel noise level. In the new plant design, we have placed all loud, over 40 decibel equipment inside the building. The landscaping will address noise abatement through a berm on the south and west property lines. Since the existing contour of the ground provides an existing berm on most of these lines, an additional berm will be added to the southwest corner, west line, to bridge the gap. Trees will also be planted along the south property line to provide a more natural view from M75. Though a mix of species is planned, white pine will be the predominant species due to its rapid growth. Based on the provided information, the Planning Commission determined that the noise would be mitigated and the site would be screened using the methods described in Kirtland's application, and the final development plan was approved as proposed. After starting production in the fall of 2011, it was quickly apparent that the noise produced by the plant exceeded the expected levels, and the Kirtland did not appear to be in compliance with the conditional use permit. The city received many complaints from surrounding citizens, and while the majority of the complaints concerned the noise, complaints regarding the size of plume, odor, smoke, and dust were also received. Kirtland representatives quickly acknowledged the fact that the noise produced by the plant exceeded their expectations and implemented measures to reduce the noise with limited effect. In February of 2012, the Citizen Committee was formed, and the EDC LDFA agreed to provide funding for consultants to review the noise and emission issues. At first, the city sought a consultant that could analyze both the noise and emission issues. However, after receiving only a limited amount of interest in the RFP and recognizing the fact that much of the emission testing would be duplicated later by testing recorded by the DEQ, it was determined that the tasks should be separated with the assessment of noise completed first. While an emissions consultant has not been retained, the Citizens Committee did submit a list of questions to the DEQ and requested additional information, additional emission modeling to be completed. The list of questions and answers and the additional modeling results were also attached to your packet for the review. In response to the RFP addressing the noise only, Resource Systems Group was hired to measure a sound from the plant, identify the noise sources, and make recommendations for mitigation. On July 9, 2012, the completed noise study was provided to the city. A copy of that study has been also put out in the review. The RSG study included short-term and long-term sound measurements taken at several locations around the city. Operational sound measurements were obtained on May 23rd when the plant was operating. To obtain background levels, measurements were taken on May 24th without the plant operating. It should be noted that Lexmar was in operation on May 24th at the time the background measurements were obtained. The RSG report shows that all the monitored locations within city limits, the noise levels were higher during the operation of the Kirtland plant than the background sound levels. Depending on the location, the operational sound levels range from 5 to 13 decibels higher than the background levels. The operational and background sound levels for each of the monitored locations are shown in figures 15 through 23 of the RSG report and are provided below. This map here is the short-term monitoring locations, with the upper number being the sound level when Kirtland was operating, and the lower being when the background when they were not. And these are the graphs showing the various frequency ranges that were in the RSG report at the various locations. Showing the brown is the operational levels, and the lighter brown is the background levels when they were monitoring. In addition to the sound measurements taken in and around the city, the sound level for each piece of equipment was also measured by RSG. Sound measurements of the equipment show that 7 pieces of outside equipment that have overall sound pressure levels above 40 decibels. The table below shows each piece of equipment that has an overall sound pressure level above 40 decibels. And those are the cooler fan model FC19, and that had a level of 113.8. The hot pellet cyclone fan model FC13 had a level of 111.1. The air power unit had 110.1. The dry hammer mill vacuum pump had 109.3. The cyclone fan FC26 had 113. The baghouse fan model FC21 had 113.1. And the dryer ID fan had 110.2. And this information was from the RSG noise report, figure C1, noise emission data from the Kirtland plant. The enclosures were constructed around 2 pieces of equipment that were outside the building, air power unit MD5009 and air power unit 6-inch. Sound coming through the walls and roof of the enclosures was measured for both pieces of equipment, and the sound coming through the enclosures exceeded 100 decibels. Consistent with the sound abatement measures contained in Kirtland's proposal and the approved development plan for the conditional use, the mitigation recommendations included in the RSG report indicated that all of the above noted equipment should be in a building. The report recommended that heavy concrete masonry structures be constructed around all the above noted equipment. The RSG report also indicated there are 2 existing enclosures that contain air power unit MD5009 and the air power unit 6-inch were ineffective and recommended those structures be rebuilt. Process. As per section 2.70G4, the conditional use for Kirtland products is being referred back to the Planning Commission for review to make a determination on compliance with the conditional use permit. Section 2.70G is as follows. The Planning Director shall make periodic investigations of developments authorized by conditional use approval to determine continued compliance with all requirements imposed by the Planning Commission. Non-compliance with the requirements and conditions approved for the conditional use shall constitute grounds for the Planning Commission to terminate the approval following public hearing. Such a hearing shall be held in accordance with the procedures used for the original hearing as required by this ordinance. A public hearing was set up, noticed, and advertised in accordance with the provisions in our ordinance. After investigation of development as authorized by the conditional use for Kirtland products, the conditional use is being referred back to the Planning Commission as per section 2.70G4 for the following reasons. Representations and information provided by Kirtland products to the Planning Commission regards the impacts of the plant on which the approval of the conditional use was considered were incomplete and or inaccurate. Sound produced by the plant exceeds levels represented to the Planning Commission. And the sound abatement and landscaping measures as proposed by Kirtland and approved for conditional use final site plan have not been completed, as all equipment exceeding 40 decibels was not placed inside the building, and landscaping as shown and described in the final approved development plan has not been installed. And my recommendation to the Planning Commission is that you should look at this and review the record and make a determination if the Kirtland products is in compliance with the conditional use plan.
Thank you. Okay, I will now open the public hearing, and I'll give the opportunity to Kirkland Products to make your presentation.
Great. Thank you. My name is Joe Quant. I'm an attorney for the company, and my address is 412 South Union in Traverse City. And with me tonight is Leon Tucker, Mike Lang, and Tom Monley, who are comprise the senior management of the company. And in some ways, this has been unusual. I mean, typically, when I get a call from a company that's in sort of a defensive posture, that's what the story is. It's a defensive posture. In this case, all I've heard from these three guys is, you know, what can we do to try to make the situation better? You know, when this thing first started, the community expressed concern to the city The city engaged the company in dialogue to determine what the problem was, how to resolve the problem. The company has continued to remain engaged in that process. They have they've met with the EDC people. They have met or they've participated in the RSG evaluation process. They hired their own retrofit engineers who specialize in sound abatement to determine what an appropriate remedial pathway is. I mean, this is unusual for people not to want to run and hide. I mean, these are folks who have stayed engaged in the process and want to be a good citizen in your community and are doing everything they can, everything that they think is reasonably that they can to try to address the concerns of the community. Now, with that being said, I think that Mr. McPherson actually did a very nice job kind of going through the history, and I'm not going to belabor it any further. I did provide kind of a review packet for each of you, and I hope that you had an opportunity to go through that. In every site plan approval, there's always going to be questions about, you know, there's always going to be open dialogue between the applicant and the planning commission or whatever the governing body is, to try to determine what are the actual concerns in the conditional use situation. In this circumstance, you know, the commission asked pointed questions of the company. The company did their best to respond to those. However, from a legal perspective, once a site plan or a development plan has been approved, everything legally coalesces into those approval documents. You know, it's no longer a question of what was said or what somebody thought was meant or something along those lines. Everything coalesces into those documents. When you look at those documents, specifically the zoning permit itself does not have any conditions attached to it. Now, I'm not saying that the company's hiding behind that. I'm just saying that from a strictly legal perspective, the zoning permit contains no conditions other than the fact that the site has to comply with the revised site plan that was amended and approved by this body unanimously in November 2010. And then everything coalesced into that final permit. Now, even if we go back and we look at a full review of the administrative record, the full review of the administrative record shows that the conditions that were imposed have been met. The conditions that were imposed were that equipment had to be, the production equipment had to be housed inside the building. And when they submitted the final site plan in November 2009, all of the production equipment was then moved inside the building. It was no longer part of a decoupled process where they're going to try to build enclosures around sound producing equipment. It was actually all moved inside. That's extraordinarily unusual for this type of manufacturing operation. You know, it was because of the heightened concern for potential noise that the company went to that extraordinary effort to basically move everything inside the building and enclose it. Also, you know, the company has tried to move beyond that with respect to implementing all of the remediation recommendations of Kodiak Equipment, which was the sound abatement engineering company. Essentially, the last piece of equipment is being retrofitted as we speak. I think that from what we understand, the concern or the difference between the actual noise that's coming from this facility and background is between 5 and 13 decibels. That's not a significant increase over the background ambient noise that comes from the industrial park itself. Now, with that 5 to 13 swing, with all of the equipment modifications that have been done in the last couple of weeks, we now strongly believe that you're not going to find any difference between ambient background noise concentrations from the industrial park and what comes from this facility. And we believe that even though, you know, I think that there are strong legal defenses, you know, this company is not here to talk about, you know, or to emphasize the legal defenses. I mean, if the time comes, then, you know, then that's, then every situation has its place in its own process to resolve disputes. We hope that that doesn't become necessary. What we believe is the more appropriate course of action here is to balance the benefits that this plant provides, you know, 30 jobs, increase in tax base, important manufacturing jobs that quite frankly are rare in Michigan and even rarer in northern Michigan, and then also look at the concerns of the public. I know that you've had some very highly engaged people who are in opposition of this facility. From Mr. McPherson's perspective, I can only, I empathize with the fact that, you know, when the phone rings and you have to answer the phone from another angry constituent, the natural human reaction is, I want to do something about this. Well, you know, I think that the company has tried to do something about this. The more reasoned approach, you know, from our perspective, is that we table this issue. You know, bring it back if you need to, but table it, conduct a new evaluation. I think that you will find that that slight increase between 5 and 13 decibels over the ambient background, and that's what we're talking about here, 5 to 13 decibels, is significant enough to shut down this plant, deprive the community of 30 well-paying jobs, and basically put what we think is the economic benefit of the community at risk. I know that you've received about 90 petitions from people who are in opposition to the facility. It's also my understanding that you've received over 1,000 petitions from people in the community who strongly support the ongoing viability of this plant. So, you know, we're continuing to try to work with you. We're here to answer any questions that you might have about the most recent engineering and construction improvements that the company has tried to undertake. I think you have a copy of the most recent compliance report from the DEQ. The DEQ has done a long-term or a full compliance evaluation, and the full compliance evaluation came back that the facility meets all Part 55 air pollution control standards for particulate odors, dust management, those types of things that have also been cited as a concern. So although I can appreciate the fact that some people are concerned, you know, with the operation of this facility, I also have to recognize the fact that you're never going to make everybody happy. But I think that we have to take a reasoned and balanced approach to try to find a solution that doesn't jeopardize the viability of this plant and still ameliorates, you know, most of the noise issues that are of concern. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to entertain those now or later.
Let's wait until later.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Okay, now open it up for the rest of the audience. Please raise your hand and I'll call on you. Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Tim Arner. I live at 701 Alice Street in White City. The odometer in my car tells me that I'm about 1 mile from Kirtland. I've lived in my house since 1984. My wife and I currently live there. I'm here primarily to express to you my concern about the noise levels that Kirtland's operations have created for me. First, let me say, I don't think this is a dispute about jobs. The petitions that have been circulating around town, in my opinion, have no legal significance. Certainly, they are an expression of people's emotions and feelings, but I don't think it really matters. We have 1,000 people think that jobs are good for Boyne City. I think you would ask anybody in here to say jobs are good for any small town in America. I think this dispute is really, it's a zoning dispute. And it has to do with compatible land use. I found this spring was about the first time that I realized that I was hearing this unusual noise. And I don't know why I didn't hear it during the winter. Probably because my windows are closed a lot. But for this spring, for the first time, I heard an unusual noise, and frankly, I wasn't sure quite what it was until I investigated it. And of course, once I knew what it was, then it was unrelenting when it was open. Certainly, people have different sensitivities to noise levels. What might bother one person might not bother another. The closer you are to the facility, I can't imagine how traumatic it must be for some of the people who live much closer than I do. I can hear the plant at 6 o'clock in the morning oftentimes with my windows of my bedroom closed. I can hear it at 3 a.m. when I wake up. I don't sleep that well anymore, and so I wake up a lot of mornings at 3 a.m. and I can hear the plant if it's operating, even though the windows on my home may be closed. When I first used to hear it, it had that nasty oscillating component, which made it even more annoying. My neighborhood is is a relatively quiet neighborhood. Certainly, I've become accustomed to the normal noises that we have in the neighborhood, whether your neighbor's mowing his lawn. The airport's not too far from me, so I've been accustomed over the years to hearing planes coming over near my home, landing and taking off. I can hear trucks going down M-75 and by the high school as they shoot through their gears. But these ambient noises are intermittent. They're not continuous. And I think that's a big distinction when the argument is made about that the levels are barely above the ambient noise. The difference is these things are very intermittent. But when Kirtland is running and operating, that noise is constant, it's continuing, it's unceasing. And that can be very annoying to people, both psychologically and emotionally. So is the noise loud enough that it wakes me up during the night? No. But if I want to sit out on my deck after work and relax and enjoy it, and I have to listen to this continuing noise, it's upsetting. I've also heard the noise. I walk the Avalanche Trail about 6 days a week now, and there are many mornings that I hear that as soon as I arrive there and start to walk up the trail. That's the first thing that I hear. And I can hear the operation of the plant most of the way up the trail. I know I've talked to people who live farther away or a little farther away than I do from the plant and up higher, and it almost seems like the noise resonates and expands and gets louder sometimes part of the way you get from the plant. Of course, the wind and the weather depends on how much you hear it. But I don't think this is about jobs. It's about what level of noise is unreasonable if you live in a residence. And I don't really think that anybody should have to sacrifice their peace and their quality of life and their enjoyment. I don't really care how many jobs it produces in Boise City, frankly. For the people that have to listen to this and be annoyed by it, it's not fair. And I don't think this planning commission would have ever approved this conditional use permit had it known the extent of the noises was going to be generated by this operation. Now, there's been representations made in the paper and otherwise that Kirtland is moving to address these things, and I compliment on that. However, I think the impatience in the community has been that it's taken a very long time and the process is very slow. I must say that I don't think, at least from where I'm standing, that Kirtland has operated that much in the last 30 days. So it's kind of hard to gauge what improvements, if any, have been made. I did hear the plant last week again in the middle of the night, and I did notice that the oscillating component seemed to be almost gone or not as noticeable.
5 minutes is up.
Okay. So back up.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak? Yes.
My name is Emily Jones. I live at 1121 North Drive. My husband, Joe, and our former whole daughter. We live approximately 10,000 feet from Kirtland. My husband bought our home 11 years ago, and I decided that everything was about 10 years. And I'm here to let you know tonight how the noise had an odorous negative impact on our lives. We first became aware of Kirtland last November when the company started. I hear the noise constantly. It's the first thing I hear when I wake up and the last thing I hear when I go to bed. This past week, I would dread coming home from work at the plant morning. I work in Petoskey, and as I would round the big curve on M-75 in Boyne, I would anxiously anticipate whether I would see the plume of smoke. If I did, I would feel my stress level increase significantly. When I got home, I would have to turn on music in order to get away from the sound. There were multiple nights where the plant woke me up in the middle of the night and prevented me from falling asleep. And during this time, I was pregnant. The sound echoes throughout our home, and the loudest is in our bedroom and our daughter's room. Recently, Kirkland reported the noise to the news review that the noise problem had been fixed. However, this is not correct. Last Wednesday, September 12th, I was woken up at 3 a.m. by the sound of the plant. My husband described the new fixed sound perfectly when he said that it sounds as though a helicopter is constantly running outside. I normally normally work full-time, but recently I had a baby in the spring and was on maternity leave during the summer, so I spent a significant amount of time at home and felt the direct impact of the noise from listening to the plant constantly. I couldn't get away from the sound. The only time I could not hear it was when I was in my bathroom with the fan running. I often would pack up my baby and go to my parents' house outside of town in order to get away from the sound, as well as the smell. When I would walk in my neighborhood, there were multiple different times the smell was so strong it would burn my eyes and lungs. For example, on June 5th, which was a beautiful day, I attempted to go for a walk with my then four-week-old baby, but I had to turn around and go inside because my eyes and lungs were burning. Later that day, I tried to sit on my front porch with the baby, but experienced the same thing. That day there was a cloud of sawdust blowing in the air from the plant. Other dates this summer where the smell and dust affected me were on May 21st, July 24th, July 31st. If the smell is bothering me that bad, what was it doing to my newborn infant? What effects does breathing in the sawdust have on an infant? After that date, if the plant was running, I would take the baby for a walk. I would pack her up and go walk downtown or at the state park where the smell would not bother us. I'm asking the planning board to revoke Kirkland's conditional permit based on the statements made by the plant in the 2008 application. The plant is in violation of multiple areas of the permit. I also want more jobs in Buena City, but not at the expense of my family's health and well-being. If no action is taken, my family and I will unfortunately move out of the community. We don't want to send our daughter to a school located so close to the plant. I'm not going to take that risk to find out years later, with her breathing in sawdust and VOCs, that they caused an illness that could have been prevented. To me, it's just not worth it.
Any other?
Good evening. I'm Ian Mitchleiter, 327 East Cedar Street, Boyne City. And last week I put together a letter to the Planning Commission. It was distributed to, I think, several members of the Planning Commission. In the event you haven't had a chance to see it, I'd like to read it now. Dear Planning Commissioners, my family lives in Boyne City, a few blocks southeast of downtown. We have been very fortunate to live for 6 years in this beautiful town, in this beautiful part of the world. Since Kirtland began operations, my family's sense of safety in our community has diminished greatly. When Kirtland operates its plant and the wind blows from the east, or even when it is calm, we smell the plant's emissions in our yard and in our surrounding neighborhood. It is most unsettling to know that we are breathing air, once pure, that I now believe poses a health and safety threat. Many a lovely night, I have had to shut my children's bedroom windows in an attempt to keep the outside air from entering. Of even greater concern, my children, along with 1,300 other children in the Boyne City schools, breathe plant emissions while attending school. I understand that the government may have levels it considers safe for pellet plant emissions, and that testing of Kirtland's emissions may be occurring at this time. Still, in my mind, there can be no safe level of emissions from a pellet plant operating so closely to an educational setting in which children play outside during recess. My family earns its income in Boyne City. My wife is employed at the Boyne Area Medical Center. Until recently, I operated a law practice in Boyne City, a business I hope to reopen in about 2 to 3 years. My wife and I believe in living and spending where we earn, so we gladly shop in Boyne City, enjoy its restaurants and ice cream stores, and pay property taxes to support our excellent schools and parks. However, should Kirtland continue to operate its plant, our absolute obligation to guard the health of our children will compel us to move from Boyne City to one of the communities nearby. Because we would be living elsewhere, my wife and I would naturally spend our Boyne-based earnings in the other community. Our community activism and involvement as citizens would also naturally be directed toward that other community. My family loves Boyne City. We do not want to move. Kirtland's continued operation here would effectively bar us from staying. So that is my family's story, and I suspect it is also the story of many other Boyne City families. The story exposes the hard economic and social reality a small town must face when a pellet plant is allowed to operate near that town's population center and schools. I urge you to fairly excuse me, I urge you to squarely face that reality as you act tonight in regards to Kirtland's use permit. I'd like to thank you very much for your time to listen, and especially for your service to the community. Thank you.
Anyone else?
My name is Leslie Pritchard. I'm at 526 Lake Street, formerly the Southside. And I also have 70 acres just outside of the city limits, above M75, on the Evangeline Township, or just over from the airport. I've been following this issue through the media. I haven't had the opportunity to attend these meetings. So I regret that I really haven't had the detailed briefings that you shared with us tonight or reviewed those staff reports and so forth. I do want to speak here in support of Kirtland, however. Point City is a wonderful community. We all enjoy the quality of life here. On the other hand, we also have an industrial park where we've opened our doors and invited businesses to come to our community to create jobs, to, you know, enjoy in the, for their employees and others the quality of life that we have. It is distressing to hear, and I certainly do respect the concerns of the other residents who are feeling the threats to their health and safety. I, on the other hand, would also like to balance that you know, the smells and the threats there, I would like to think, would be addressed at least in some reasonable measure by the DEQ, and that truly we're not in such a state that we should be, you know, pulling up stakes and moving elsewhere. I know that as I've lived throughout the area and enjoyed the many outdoors and all of that we do enjoy, I'm well aware of smells and sounds, including those that come all the way from East Jordan. I don't think we're about to close the ironworks, and yet when the winds are such, I don't think there's anyone here that could say that smell isn't it's an unmistakable one when the ironworks even drifts over our town. If in fact there's a lot of smelling in the homes, I think that would be of certain concern, and I do respect that others want to walk and enjoy that without fearing for their health. However, it certainly seems to me that Kirtland has made every effort to be a good citizen here in our community and made efforts to comply. We've had zoning issues before this commission and others where we've been over backwards to waive our zoning requirements and to do all sorts of things that some of us would find to be really even quite egregious, but they've come to me with every effort that they've made. I've been actually somewhat embarrassed as a member of this community by the, it seems to me, the way the media has presented this, and you know, I'm ashamed for them for coming here and trying to actually bring a business in Northern Michigan that this is a timber industry community. It was founded on that. I'm not saying we're going to go back to the open location that we had, but this is also an environmentally conscious business, as I can read it and as I see it, looking at sustainable, trying to repurpose a building in an industrial park. And, you know, the sound levels that you're referring to, I heard the puff of the pressure things on my property where I go to enjoy solitude and peace. I'm well aware of the traffic on M75, everything from when the band practices to the football field games to when the bars close, I can hear the traffic and the sounds. It's part of living in a vibrant community. I ask that you volunteer with us and the way that you address this tonight. Thank you.
Any other questions? Way in the back.
Brian Cruiser. My name is 1121 First Street. Our family's been going for five generations. I live on the top of the hill behind McDonald's, and I hear no sound. I smell nothing, and my windows are open all the time, and I really don't understand what people are hearing when there's, you know, 5 or 4 or 5, and And I'm also just saying, thank you.
Thank you.
In the green shirt?
Hi, my name is Ryan Gim, and I live on Boyce Street, roughly 3/8 of a mile from the plant. My family and I have lived here about 14 years now, and my wife had written a letter, I believe Scott included, and she kind of described in that letter how the plant has affected our family life. You know, real quick, from an emissions standpoint, I don't think there's any of us that would argue that they'll probably, if you were below the DEQ levels, most of what we see is water vapor. But we know that with every emission plant that has emissions, there is some level of risk, okay? Everything we do in life has some risk associated, whether we recognize it or not, when we get in our car to go to work in the morning or whatever. So, you know, the concern in the community, I think, is legitimate when you think, do we want to take that risk with the campus of, you know, 1,200 kids or whatever is actually closer than my house. But, you know, those are kind of emotions. But I remember when we started, Commissioner Needhammer asked, you want some facts. And so you guys paid $15,000 for the report that Scott put up there briefly, and there's a lot of facts in there. Okay, so I'd like to talk quickly about what's in that report. My background is I'm a vibrations engineer, principally. Vibrations operate on waves, and noise kind of operates, they follow the same principles, so I have a little idea of what's going on here, okay? Ambient, they mentioned that the ambient levels. Ambient noise is white noise. If white noise bugged people, we'd all be insane. It's airports, it's bands, it's loud, it's Harley Davidsons. It comes and goes, it's all part of a small community, and it's ambient noise. It really doesn't bother anyone other than maybe some loud noises occasionally, okay? The other thing to keep in mind is there are the difference between ambience and with the plant running is 5 to 13 decibels, okay? The overall levels. This is the decibel scale is a log scale. So for every 10 decibel increase, that's a doubling of perceived noise, okay? So 5 decibels is quite a bit, and it makes a difference as far as what you perceive, okay? So as an engineer, I look at this report that they did, and I thought, well, why are they so close? Especially, Scott had the graph up there where they did the short-term monitoring, and if you want to put up, Scott, that'd be great. I'm going to try to make it in like 5 minutes. And so I looked at those levels, and I thought, well, they are pretty close, but we all know that we can hear this, and it's very loud. And so I asked the question of the consultant at the review meeting, and I said, are these, you know, nighttime levels, daytime levels, but they're average levels, okay? So if you look through the report, and I won't make you guys do it, it's actually going to be a flip so you can follow it, but if you look in the report, look at any of the wind graphs, okay? Any of the graphs that have the wind listed, and interestingly enough, when they did the testing, the wind was quite quiet, okay? When they did the ambient measurements, there was a lot of wind, and we were talking 10, 15 miles per hour. So look at those graphs, and you'll see, you know, it's my opinion that the ambient testing levels were pretty much, were kind of, I shouldn't say that, they might have been affected by the wind, okay? Another interesting thing, when you look at the pictures, is all the microphones are placed by trees or in foliage, okay? And there's a chain there, because I think they're afraid someone's going to steal their clip. But interesting enough, so now if I have a windy tree next to a microphone, it'd be my opinion that it's going to affect the ambient level. So if you take all those and average them together, we end up with ambients that are, they're probably higher, I know they're higher than what you're going to see at 3 o'clock on February 3rd when it's 0 degrees outside. You know, that ambient's going to be down 30-ish. It would be, again, that's my opinion, I'm not going to say that's fact. You know, the other thing, when you look at some of those high ambients, the folks who live over by behind the Shell station, whatever that area is, I'm gonna guess that there's lots of road noise that's figured into those ambient levels. Okay, so you know, if you look at the difference there, interestingly enough, the difference between their ambient and when the plant was running wasn't as great because they did have a lot of noise in their ambients. So But the real interesting thing, and this is what I like to help you guys understand.
You have 20 seconds left.
Already?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. look on those graphs that Scott had. Look at the 125 hertz and 250 hertz frequencies. Okay? There's always more than a 10 decibel difference, anywhere from 7 to 27. As you get further away from the plant, those differences between ambient and absolute don't
time
change.
Can he have my 5 minutes?
We may come back to him at the end.
Okay.
I want to give everyone an opportunity to speak first. But that's a kind offer. Would anyone else want to speak?
Tom Earhart, Northern Lakes Economic Alliance. Our organization assists businesses and helps to grow the economy throughout Northern Michigan. Offices are in Boyne City, but we cover all of Northern Michigan. I just wanted to express a few things that I've observed through this process, and that is, and enlighten you a little bit on what I know about Kirtland. I worked with them before they opened, after they opened, and on a number of different business issues. And I have to tell you that I've worked with over 100 companies just in the past year, and I really put them at the top of the list as far as businesses that are concerned about the community, want to make things right, want to be part of the community, want to add value to the community. That's really what, it's just incredible to me how high those ideals are within that organization by the management team. And as I said, I've worked with a lot of companies. Also, I know that there's a lot of support within the industrial complex from many of the other businesses, but a lot of times those business leaders choose not to speak up so as either not to get involved or not to have retaliation or have their business singled out and that sort of thing. So I suspect that might be why you don't hear from more of them. The other thing, my office is about 300 feet, well, probably less than 300 feet from Kirtland. And in the past week to 10 days, I've noticed just an amazing difference in the lower sound level that is now there. So much so that a few days ago, I contacted them. I said, are you operating? Are you operating in full capacity? Are you doing what you did before? Because it was so different. So I really think, I know they engaged an industrial engineer to help address the concerns immediately after they got the report from the city. And I know they immediately then went to work at trying to reduce the sound level after that. And so I commend them for that. And I think it's made a huge difference that I would suspect a lot of people have noticed. I also want to commend the city, Boyne City. Your community is really renowned in working with the businesses and working with and trying to encourage economic growth, and you're a shining example, and others throughout Northern Michigan are jealous in most cases at how well you've chosen to work together. And it is all the different aspects of the community, the government, the public, the business community, all working together to make things work and grow the economy. So I hope that you'll consider those things and that you'll keep up the good work that you're doing here.
And the gentleman behind you. Yeah.
Don Ness, and I live at 316 Boise, about a third of a mile from the plant. I've only lived in this town about 72 and a half years. This town, when the tannery was running, had a lot of pollution. They got rid of the tannery. Hundreds of jobs were lost. The town made it. The town has been doing nothing but going forward from that day on. Now we're going backwards, and I hate to see it.
Any other?
I'm Jim Bowman. I'm the executive director of the Boyne Area Chamber of Commerce. I would just like to ask you to give Kirtland a bit more time. You know, this RSG report only came out 2 months ago. They very quickly engaged a consultant. They have, by many accounts, reduced the worst of the noise by a great degree. And they're still not done. There's some of that equipment that hasn't been installed yet. The DEQ testing. We have preliminary results. We don't have final results. It just seems to me we've taken this long. Let's give them a chance, and let's finish what they've started and to get the full testing results. I think that's the least we can do, and I'm not sure how long that might be. I'm guessing 60 days, but we need to work with Kirtland to at least try. We've gone through all this process. We've set up a committee to try and come up with a win-win situation, and then to just throw it away after a very short time, after the report comes out, after they've tried to address the situation. I think that's unreasonable, and I think we need to work with them just a little while longer. Thank you.
Hi. I'm visiting here from Newfoundland, visiting my mom. My name is April Marshall. I come, 2 weeks ago, one night, I said, "What is that noise?" And she said, "I don't hear anything." And I hear Puna's sound, a certain sound, and I've never heard it before. But I'm just saying this myself. She just lives right across the street. And to hear that noise, it was late at night, so I don't know if the fog brought it in, or, that does carry, or what, but I didn't like it. And so if I was to want to come back to Boyne City, because I used to live here, I don't know, because a lot of people would come up to visit, to go camping, or they go to Glen's. Oh, I kind of hear that noise and wonder what those smells are. And then, because I don't want to live here. Why should I put my money here? I'm not, I'll get out of here. The taxes are high. For what? I don't know. That's just my opinion, but I just want to put my two cents in. Thanks.
Any other comments?
Sorry about that. I really wasn't going to say anything. I'd like to tell you a story. And the story is about a couple here in Boyne City.
Did you say your name and address?
I'm sorry. Mark Kowalski, Fall Park Road.
Thank you.
The story is about a couple who invested in a business here in Boyne. In order to do so, they needed money. So what they did is they took all the equity out of their house, cashed in their retirement, got with some other folks, borrowed some money from the bank, made an investment. They bought the Carter's grocery store because they wanted to open up another grocery store in Boyne City. At the 11th hour, the lease was taken over, and this couple was unable to open up the store right away. The lease comes up in a year. I would like you, if you would, in your deliberation, or any time you like, to take the time to walk around the Carter's building and imagine it as being an open grocery store again. While the plant is running, I'd like you to smell the air. Is this where a grocery store should be? I'd like you to listen. And is this where a grocery store should be? Walk around the back of the building. This couple invested everything they had, just like Kirtland's. I ask you to keep this in mind. 2 years ago, there was no question that this was a grocery store that could be opened up again. But now I don't know. The wife of this couple was named Jody. And her husband was named Mark. And I ask you for your help.
Thank you. Mr. Guyon, would you like to discuss anything any further?
Do you want to hear it?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't want to bore you guys, but I was, what I'm trying to do, what I tried to do is understand why there seems to be this difference between the ambient levels and the, when they're running, operational levels, okay? And so real quickly, if you just flip through those graphs, I mean, what you need to pay attention to is the 125 hertz and the 250 hertz frequencies. And you don't have to do it right now, but those two frequencies are the ones that you hear. Okay, it's that. Those are the ones that are annoying, and they really go through structure. Okay, so if you look at as you work your way down the beers, I believe that is, well, that's at the church. I mean, you've got lots of differences all the way through every frequency range. I won't make you flip to them. Same thing here at the other end of Beardsley by the gymnastics center. You know, 23 decibels of difference in 125 hertz frequency. Remember, keep in mind, 10 decibels is a doubling of perceived sound, okay? Same thing at 250. You've got those frequencies that lay on top of each other. So then at Boyne Summit, interestingly enough, you don't see the difference. There's a lot. And I mentioned, I think there's a lot of traffic noise in the Boyne Summit ambient readings, okay? Then interestingly enough, when you get to the Coon Resonance graph, they're about an eighth of a mile away, you still got 15 and 21 decibels of difference. Okay, the other frequency ranges, the difference is coming together, but the 125, 250 stick out. Boyne, the storage street units, you got 5/8 of a mile there, still got, you know, 20 decibels and 11 decibels of difference. Now you're up to 0.9 miles, you got 12 decibel difference. At the corner of the old M75 loop, that's over a mile away, and you got 15 decibels of difference still at the 125 hertz frequency, 9 decibels at 250. Your 250 is starting to damp out. At that point, you still got the very dominant 125 hertz frequency. So my point is, this noise propagates really well, okay? So for those of us who aren't really just complaining, I mean, it's an issue, and a great example would be last night. The wind lays down at night, but one of the nights it was really windy and actually picked up around 9, 10 o'clock. The wind created so much ambient noise that I couldn't hear it when operating. When I shut the slider door, 125 hertz was right there. It's in our bedroom. It's in, interesting enough, it's in my basement, stronger than my bedroom or my son's bedroom. So just, you know, I wanted to get a hold or grasp around what's going on. Why is this, you know, why are these levels like this? So I wanted to try to help you guys understand as well. Okay? Oh, I had written this down. One gentleman said he's 300 feet away and it sounded like it made a difference. And again, if you damp those high frequency sound levels, yeah, this is going to make a difference, but just the 125 hertz that propagates. The further away you get, and all the high frequency stuff, it goes away. That's very dominant. So, you know, we're not anti-Kirtland. We're definitely not anti-jobs, not anti-Boyne City, but we would like to be able to close our doors and windows and sleep. So, thanks for letting me finish up.
My name is Kurt Rowland, and I live in Springwater Beach, outside of town. And I guess I have a question for the board is, have, or any of you, I know Tom has, but Scott, have been to these sites where these people's homes are? Have you been in their homes? Have you had a chance to hear or experience what they're talking about? I've been in three of them. And I've been to the airport up on the Avalanche and up in, you know, in those places, I was really amazed how loud it was. I mean, again, not to, you know, exaggerate, you know, what's going on with Kirtland, but It is. It's pretty amazing how loud this has been. So, you know, before you make a decision or whatever your decision is, I know some of the commissioners, city commissioners, did visit sites, did go to places and experience this. I've been in three of them, and I truly was really amazed at how noisy this was. And to, you know, live in a situation like that would be very difficult. And I'm sure if you were in that situation, you'd probably be, you know, questioning what's going on. So that's my comment, but I would like to see all of you get to these places and find out what's going on if you have.
Any other comments?
My name is Joe Jones. I live up the hill from the health plan on 1124 Nordic Drive. I'm a very small business in the industrial park, just two employees. I just want to comment on the most recent fixes to the power plant and noise. From my perspective up the hill, the slow oscillation has changed, and but it hasn't gone away. It's just sped up, more like a, you know, from my angle of the plant, it's more like a helicopter turning its propellers all the time, just faster oscillation. And I haven't noticed any decibel decrease so most recently.
My name is Chris Witta. I live at 1114 Point Summit. And I've been taking readings from, decibel readings from February till recently when they made the changes to the equipment. Before they made the changes, it ranged anywhere from 47 to 53 decibels. Last week when they were running, it was 45 to 54. There has not been a change in the volume. Maybe a change in the sound itself, but not the volume. I can hear it in the house. I can hear it in the basement. I can't get away from it when they're running. We just need it to stop.
Any other comments?
I had several people come up to me when they were getting their testing, and they're running 24 hours a day. And they were like, "Mindy, I thought Kirkland was supposed to be running for their testing." And I said, "They are." And everybody said, "Well, we can't even hear them." This is several people that work at Lexmark, several people I know out on the M75 loop. I know a couple of the people that were agitated by the noise because it had actually called the city and said what an excellent job they had done. Is that being told to the public about the people that are coming in and telling positive things, or are we just reading the negative emails? I know that a lot of people have called into the city and applauded them for the job that they had done. And a lot of people didn't even know they were running after they made their guesses. I think they've been getting blamed for a lot of things. I wonder if there's follow-up. At one time, they said that there was a bunch of dust on all the mailboxes up in Nordic Drive. Immediately, that same day, I was up there with a camera and we took pictures of all those mailboxes. We did not see one drop of evidence of any dust on those mailboxes. There happened to be snow on the ground. There was no snow from Carter's all the way up there. So in order for that to have happened, if it did happen, it would have had to go up in the sky, up over the snow, past shells, and then come down onto all the mailboxes. I mean, is there follow-up done on these reports? The kicker is the one that they showed here in one city meeting about the sawdust on city's tablecloth. If it would have been that bad on the green piece of transformer or whatever it was, you would think that they would have taken pictures of it while it was still sitting there, right? Checked the snow trail around it. There was snow on the ground at that time. Followed the trail, too, to see where it was coming from. That was never done. That stuff was removed and put on a tablecloth, and then pictures were shown to the public. The public that may be feared by that. We went around, and on my 3:15 breaks, I work at Lexmark, I've been here 20 years. On my 10:15 breaks, on my 3:15 breaks, I drive around, and I look at all these green transformers. I've never once seen any particulate on those transformers, so I just wonder if some of these things are being followed up on. I feel like they get blamed for a lot of things. There was a big scope by the middle school. Oh, it's coming from Kirtland. There was a gas leak that came from downstate. It was in the newspaper. Went all the way up to Magna. Oh, it's coming from Kirtland. There's this dust everywhere. It's coming from Kirtland. I just wonder if these are being followed up on, and is it fair that they're getting the brunt of all these things that are being blamed? The smoke smell? For 3 days straight, over there across from Quick Care in that pit, they had a brush fire. For 3 days, they were burning brush. There isn't any smoke coming out of that stack at Kirtland. It's paper. It doesn't smell like smoke. So I just wonder if these things are being followed up, and are they being told to the public that, you know what, we found out this was false, this was false, this was false, or are they just getting shoved under the rug and only the negative stuff is being written in all these emails? And school enrollment is up this year. People thought that maybe it would hurt the school enrollment. They actually have to hire new teachers for kindergarten because the enrollment is up so much. So, you know, I wasn't going to say anything, but I sit here and listen to everything, and it just bothers me that I don't think both sides of the stories are being told, and it's very upsetting. And don't think some of us are upset for what we're going through. And to watch these, you know, I think a lot of stuff needs to be addressed. Thank you.
I'm Mike Cummins, and I'm the fellow that started the first petition. And the reason we started the petition was so our elected officials, our board members, could hear the silent majority in this city. If you've read those petitions, you will see that we said there is a sound noise problem. We said that a smell problem developed. What worried the silent majority, and I'm speaking for quite a few of them now, is the fact that we read in the newspaper that when it was sent back to you folks, that it was to close that plant, pull that permit. That's not right. I can take you back to 2008 when this whole thing started. And I can, and as these, many of you that are on that board right now, carried it forward. We had presentations at all our nonprofit groups in this city, stating what a wonderful thing it was. It's not about jobs. It's about our community. Most of the people that signed that petition, or the petition that I was involved in, have sympathy for the people that are hurting. We're not saying there isn't a sound. What we're asking you is not to close the plant. Don't label this community as non-friendly to industrial. 1985, that was declared an industrial park, a state-certified industrial park. A while back, we called it a business park so we could put a showroom on an extension on a building. We have to take a look at all that, and I'm asking you folks to do the same thing. Give them a continuation. You've seen what they can do in a short period of time. It's not going to be fixed overnight. Think of it. It took from 2008 to 2011 to flip the switch to actually start manufacturing. It appears that it only took about 4 months to figure out that we had a problem, both them and us. What is it going to do to shut them down, to pull that permit? We can afford, as a community, to give them extra time. And we owe it to the citizens. That's how I got involved. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Yes, I just wanted to respond to a couple of comments that were made. And certainly, you know, we appreciate all of the comments. I think that most of the negative comments have been primarily subjective. I mean, with the exception of this gentleman, Ryan.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Sorry. You know, who has an engineering background, but admittedly not in this discipline. We've looked at the graphs. You know, the as far as accurate measurements of ambient noise, I would think that RSG, who is the expert, you know, engineers and expert evaluators in this arena, that they would know how to essentially, I guess, balance, you know, what ambient sound is versus, you know, ambient sound from other interfering circumstances. And otherwise, that would have been noted in the report, and it wasn't. When it was significant or when it was noteworthy, they did note it. So I don't think that that we need to look at the RSG report as saying, well, that's the best case alternative, because, you know, I don't think that if you empirically evaluate that report, I think it clearly is on balance fairly substantively accurate. With respect to some of the other comments, I did note that Ms. Jones commented that, you know, made some observations with respect to her visits to the plant on June 1st. I would also note that within days of that visit, Kurt Childs, who's the air quality manager for the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, visited the facility and found that there were no odors were barely detectable, and that the opacity with respect to the ability to emit the particulate like fine dust, et cetera, was well within acceptable ranges. It was 7.29% when the ranges are between 5 and 15%. So certainly it was well within all MDEQ criteria guidance. Also with respect to all of the noted scientific, reliable, objective documentation and evidence, none of the readings that have been taken exceed the both the EPA guidelines and guidelines that are relevant to other communities in our area. I think I provided as part of your package ranges of acceptable noise that are referenced in Alpena, Traverse City, and Ludington, and certainly this facility would be well within those ranges within those communities. What we're looking for here is we're looking for an objective criteria so that we don't keep coming back and saying, you know, well, you know, you know, I smelled it on this day, or I thought I smelled it on that day, or I saw dust, you know, settling somewhere. That's not objective. Well, you can't base a permit evaluation based upon a subjective analysis of I thought it was offensive, you know, in my opinion. What I would encourage you to do, and what the company is willing to do, is sit down and put together an actual objective criteria, you know, to say that the facility will not exceed these ranges of acceptable noise emissions based upon a certain distance from the plant. I think that if we look at some of the other objective criteria that other communities use, like I said, the three that I referenced plus the EPA, I think that you would see that there is, most communities have an objective standard. You have a general nuisance standard that applies in Boyne City. And you know, and it's a general nuisance standard that appears that applies to all of the things that have been complained of tonight. It applies to noise, applies to odor, you know, applies to particulate or dust or any other item that could become a common nuisance. So, and really, I'm sure that your lawyer would tell you that that's a hard thing to enforce, you know, because it is so subjective. Most courts refuse to enforce it because it is kind of a I know it when I see it sort of analysis. So just to wrap up here, really, you know, and it's not my purview to tell you your job, but you have to look at this. The Planning Commission's job is to look at the documents, not, you know, I was there on X date and I didn't like it, or I live X feet away and I don't like it. You have to look at what is in the documents. The zoning permit itself has no conditions other than that the approved site plan has to be recognized. Also, when you look at the objective criteria, even as established in the record documents, administrative record, it has no specific criteria that it relies upon other than the fact that you need a berm with some trees, and the trees were delayed until this year, and since it's going to be conifers that are planted, The best time to plant them is in the fall, so that's when they're going to be done. And also having the production equipment inside, which it is. Those are the criteria that are relevant for the purposes of this evaluation.
Thank you. I got one quick question.
Yes, sir.
Early on, you stated that the agreements in this or all the minutes that occurred has no bearing on the conditional use findings. Is that correct?
No, sir. Everything coalesces into the actual conditions themselves.
Okay.
You know, the dialogue that happens between the parties is not part of the permit. You know, the job of the Planning Commission is to evaluate the permit itself and whether or not the permit conditions have not been satisfied. You have a column, you know, on the
yes.
on the right side of that paper that says exactly what the conditions are,
mm-hmm.
You have the initial findings and then you have the final findings that establish that. And when you get to the criteria of noise and you go all the way over to the right column, it says exactly what those two conditions are. Those are the conditions that are relevant for this body to evaluate.
Because the way it appeared was any dialogue that occurred prior to that didn't have anything to do with anything on this, but it all was added into this document.
That it all coalesces into those conditions. The issue of whether or not the facility is in compliance is based upon those documents.
Okay. Thank you.
Are we still in public comment?
I think so. Actually, you didn't close it yet.
You're right. Okay.
Again, Ian Mitchell, 327 East Cedar Street. Mr. Kwan is the attorney representing Kirtland, and Mr. Kozlowski is to issue the question to Kirtland's representative. I don't see the city's attorney this evening. I would hope the city would rely on its own attorney when it seeks answers in regard to the permit process.
All right.
Thank you.
Clarification for his comment. I wasn't asking what was in the body. It was just a comment that he made, and he clarified it to me. That was it.
And I agree entirely with Mr. Mitchell.
I wasn't negotiating anything.
Okay.
It was a question.
Okay. Thank you both.
All right. Does the board have any questions or points where they would like clarified with anybody in the room before I close the public hearing? We're okay?
What's up?
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing, and now it's time for board deliberation. Sorry. Do you have anything else that you would like to?
Nothing specific. I guess as you deliberate, you have any specific questions, I don't have any answer. I think at this point, we probably need to do two different things. One, first, determine compliance with the conditional use permit, make findings to that fact, and then based on that findings, determine what you're going to do about that.
I don't mind starting out here. I can't say I'm George Elwinger. I'm a planning. I've been with this board a number of years, and I have to say I'm very sympathetic to both sides here. I wouldn't want to live in a house and have to hear this noise. I mean, it could be this person's house, and next door they don't have it. I'm sure those noises are terrible. They're upsetting, and people who have poured their whole heart in their home, and now they feel that they can't sell it. That's a very disturbing, upsetting position. The gentleman from Kirkland here, they're working hard to get rid of this noise. I've been in manufacturing and related for 47 years, and I know what it is to put stuff in process and the timing. And it's an awful situation when you have all these things going on. I read this report, and I'm not pointing fingers other than I come to this summary here, you know, and I look at the company that was hired. Suggestions of what can go on here, you know. And before I go into that, I just want to thank the people, the volunteers from Boyne City. I mean, you have business people, people from all walks of life are so involved to try to make this end goal. I mean, I thank them. I mean, I know those people were on there. I wasn't on that committee because of the conflict of interest, but I thank those people. But, you know, I look at some of the things, and it looks like, and I'm pointing that some of the things that were agreed to be done initially haven't gotten done. For the noise, you know, and like what they, in other words, they're surrounding some of this outside equipment with steel bunkers or whatever it is, so that the noise doesn't reverberate out or down or whatever, stuff like that. So I would really like to see some of these things implemented. You know, I mean, I don't know why they haven't been done. Obviously, there's lots of things going on, but. Nobody wants to see anybody unemployed.
I'm sorry, it's my understanding though that the report came from the committee, but it wasn't necessarily something that Kirtland was required to do. It was, this is what could be done to reduce the noise. Am I reading?
I'm this report right here from
the RSG report. Yeah.
If they make these suggestions, and they're hired and rehired them, or who paid for them, I would just like to see some of these things get put into motion and see if there's some resolution or some results to obtain from this. And why I just can't carte blanche come out and say, no, you're not, you know. The reason we have a conditional, well, I don't want to argue conditional. I mean, we can go on and on about that. But we are led to believe that, I mean, I got, there's one part, I'm waiting for all this thing to jump around. But when it first came in here, it said that the decibels wouldn't be higher than 24. Well, we know that isn't true. We look at all the machines. I mean, they're up to 100. I mean, they're high, but I don't care what that is, as long as you can sustain the noise. You know, Jim Ballman said, we'd like to work with you, you know? It's a tough decision. I guess I'm rambling on, but I'm going to pass it on to Joe here. What do you want to say, Joe?
Well, I guess I've always thought one of the things that the zoning ordinance and the planning board is supposed to do, why they even exist, is to protect adjacent property values while allowing something to go on it, or allow a business to happen. I can't open a fried chicken place in my house and then put a KFC sign on it. There's some boundaries. So it sounds like Kirtland's made a lot of progress, but then it comes back to the main. I remember, you know, when you first came to us, heck, all I was thinking was the Carter's Building, St. Matthews, and that area, and then across, a little bit across the street of M75 would be affected. We've never run into anything that's affected so many people so far away. It's amazing how the sight, the sound, and the fumes that we're really supposed to be very careful of in our ordinance, because they do affect adjacent property values. We have to be very careful about letting them continue, but as I said again, we've certainly made progress so much. Yep. And how long? But I'm very concerned about neighbors' property values and their health, the sight, the sound, and the fumes. By what Mr. Attorney says, we were told that was not going to happen, and it certainly does affect property values. Where we cross every T and I and say, know, if I stepped outside 1 foot over the property line, it's going to be 23 decibels, and 1 foot in, it's going to be 24 decibels. I take a man at his word, and it has come a long way. As far as planting landscapes only in the fall, well, I do it 9 months out of the year, so put an irrigation system, you can plant 9 months out of the year pretty much. You can't dig 9 months out of the year, but you can plant. But I'm very concerned with the neighbor's property values, especially the and the sound's getting better, I guess, but there's still an awful lot of sound problem. I'm not a sound engineer. I'm a local planner, just trying to look after his neighbors too and trying to keep business going. So we still have some problems here.
Got a couple of questions. Again, the 24 decibels, you know, the sound noise is higher than that. So that is a number, though, that was discussed and was tried, or you tried to achieve that number. So those were a couple of comments that I read in screening of the north property line, the evergreens, and you addressed that was a condition. Some other conditions, and now I'm reading right from the conditional use findings, public health, safety, welfare, and it says the standards met. So in my eyes, it's been met through the city and completed, but it sounds like there is still some issues out there. The next one is the property in the neighborhood, the values, it sounds like, and I'm not a realtor, certainly the times are driving property prices to be high, but certainly you don't want folks to move away or relocate because of an issue. So to me, that is a condition that was agreed upon both parties. Let's see, I've got another one here. The condition with the environment, what's coming out of the stack, what's in that, you indicated that you did have some findings. Of course, according to this, we know nothing about the findings, so we're dealing with facts right here, right now, in this time. So that was one issue that I think was binding that needed to be clarified, and there may be a clarification to the city, but I don't think this panel has any indication of that. The landscaping, again, you referenced that. Let's see, here's another phase of the landscaping that was going to help take care of some of the sound issues. Then, of course, the sound issue was the biggest one in the findings, that the site has been designed to buildings so arrange the equipment inside to limit the sound. Berms, trees, decoupling the building is required, equipment to be constructed to minimize noises. That was one of the standards that was put in the package, and the mechanical equipment. It sounds like those are items that were in this that in my eyes, I can't answer for anyone else, in my eyes, haven't been resolved at this time. You know, maybe your intention is to do that, or you're very close, but seeing the graphs as I did, you know, there's a threshold of sound, and you can accept this much, but once you go over it, it's annoying, and a lot of these graphs indicate that it is still above that level. How far above? I guess that's a determination we have to make, but it still indicates that it is above that level. And according to these, you know, the findings and the facts, in my eyes, those conditions haven't been met. I think that was about all that I had as far as the issues in the findings. Chris?
Yeah, I appreciate the challenge on both sides of this issue. I think to try to, you know, you appreciate the emotion and those subjective ideas, and I think those do play a part. But I think ultimately we have to get to an objective way to review this. And I think Scott clearly pointed out, the first question is, right now, are they in compliance with the conditional zoning that was granted? And I think we need to answer that question, yes or no, based on what points. And then if yes, then they are. If not, at what points? And then have discussion if we move to try to identify certain points where they have to be to potentially get there. I'm just trying to think of a way to put a schedule or a way to proceed.
I guess in closer agreement with Chris, how do you get that objective criteria, to borrow his words? I think it's doable. Like some of the others, I do believe we should allow more time. I don't think we should take it lightly at all to revoke a permit. I rely on expert findings, and maybe we don't have all the testing results, but we do have some preliminary. I think they've gone above and beyond our initial conditional use. And maybe raise some more questions, but certainly that came after some of this. So that's where I'm at. If we had to vote, I certainly wouldn't want to revoke a permit.
Answer both. Would I say I am compliant right now based on what we're told? I would say no. Do we need to give them more time? I think we should. Well, that's just my opinion, because all these people out here, these residents, are getting frustrated, and I would be frustrated too. And I don't want to see 30 people unemployed. So I guess if they want to take it more steps, you know, but I would agree with Chris. I don't believe they're in compliance, but I'm just leaning towards giving them a shot at it.
I'd like to give a couple more board members a chance to speak.
My turn.
Your turn, Dallas.
I, too, in the spirit of conditional use permit, find that they are not in compliance. And it's based on the fact that, respectfully, I disagree with you, sir, but I believe that when they said that all equipment exceeding 40 decibels would be inside a decoupled wall building, I think that's part of the conditional use. I agree that when they said that the loudest noise would be the backup beeper on the loader, when they said it would not be louder than Lexamar, then those are, I believe, in the spirit of the conditional use permit, are part of that. And I would find that you are not in compliance. But I, too, appreciate the spirit of cooperation, and I think from day one, I said we can solve this. I still think we can solve this. But I do find you, in my opinion, not in compliance. And I will say that the improvements by Kodiak in the last 2 weeks have improved. But you can still hear them resounding right through the walls of the people that are affected. And so we have more work to do.
Well, there's certainly plenty of blame to go around, you know, and to think back to November of 2008 when they came forward to the Planning Commission. You know, we're sort of in the midst of a huge, big recession. You know, here comes a company that says, we think we can bring 60, 70 jobs to the community. You know, I mean, it was like manna from heaven coming. And I think that when we went through the conditional uses of the findings of fact, we probably gave them the benefit of the doubt most everywhere, as opposed to, you know, being a little bit more thorough in our looking. The plant should probably not have be located there. You know, the industrial district is supposedly not for heavy manufacturing. It's supposed to be for less than that. But they're there, so let's try and make it work at this point. During the process they went through, they said, you know, they would abate the noise, and they gave some things during the November 2008 meeting and the November 2009 meeting that all sounded very good, and to my thinking they were very good. And only after the plant got up and running, they admitted this noise is more than we anticipated, and we're going to do everything we can to fix it. And they have, I think, done a lot to try to fix it. I think there's more that could be done, should be done. You know, it was my understanding from the conditional use permit that, you know, anything that made noise greater than 40 decibels was either going to be put in a decoupled building that was outside, or those equipments were going to be moved inside. And we have the RSG report that says there's half a dozen or so pieces of equipment that are still outside that are making 100 decibels. You know, should they not be put inside or put in a decoupled building? Yeah, I understand the RSG report is, you're not bound by that. But I think you are bound by, you know, the permit that says basically noise will be abated, minimized. And in that regard, I think there's still a lot more that could be done with the noise issue. And Ryan Gem is right. It's that 125 hertz frequency and the 250, those low-frequency sounds that go through a structure, you know. And those are the ones that are the greatest difference between what's happening in the background, you know. And when we're talking 10 and 20 decibels and 23 decibels of difference, we're talking about, you know, the first 10 decibels is a doubling of the noise. The next 10 decibels is a doubling of that doubling of the noise. Contrary to what Mr. Quan said, you know, he is an expert in vibration, so he's probably as good a person as the RSG people, because that's his background. The other thing in the conditional use permit is that I think we, based on the presentations that were given, the assertions that were made, you know, was that property values would not be decreased. And I do believe, although it's hard to prove dollar for dollar, but I think there's been a lot of property values that are decreased in the residential neighborhoods. And if you fix the noise stuff, get rid of those low frequency vibrations, you're going to solve the problem, you know, and everybody's going to be happy. The only other thing is going to be left is the stat testing, the vapors and the VOCs, the particulates, and I guess we have to wait for the final reports on that. And if those final reports say, you know, according to the DEQ and the EPA, that that it's all okay, there's nothing that any of us can say here that's going to, you know, can be against that. You know, but those are the experts. We are going to have to go with them. But on the noise, I think there's more that needs to be done. You know, these buildings that are, or these equipments that are making the noise and the low frequency noises have got to be fixed. At this point, I think they're not in compliance with the conditional use permit. But I think we should give them more time. How much time? I don't know. Jim Bauman suggested 60 days. That does not seem to me to be unreasonable, but I don't think it should get much longer than that. I think they're making progress, but we need to make more progress and get rid of the noise. That's all.
Well, I've learned more about noise and sound than I ever wanted to know. Thank you for your tutorial today. I agree about the low frequency sounds. Anyone who has lived in an apartment or has teenagers at home understands the low bass that just rocks. You don't hear the rest of the music, you just hear that low bass sound. And it appears to me from the RSG report that that's what's happening. And it's not that it is above the ambient sound, just that little bit more. There is no other ambient sound. You don't hear the crickets or any breeze or anything. That's the sound that you hear. And that's what I got from reading the report. So I concur with what I've heard quite a few folks say, that they would not be in compliance, but I would also like to give them time, because they have been working towards a solution, and I'd like to give them time to complete what they were going to do, and then I don't know if the next step is further testing or what. The objective criteria setting was mentioned. I don't know if that's something that we tackle, not tonight, but at some point. We talked about more times to finish their modifications, to get testing results, and perhaps do further sound testing. Is there anything else that...
We made a lot of progress, and I guess no one cited DEQ says it's all right to do whatever, but as part of our, and yes, we did stretch this as far as coming into the community, but being so close to the church and schools, and one reason that it was kept going and all right, so was that this was going to be very clean, out of the stacks, and I didn't know if there was more progress being made in that direction, if anybody on the board knew or doing it. How much more progress is being projected to be, can more scrubbers be added? Are they coming in line, or is there another, I don't know these.
DEQ did their testing and we're waiting for their written report. And so I would like...
DEQ is not living in this town or sitting on this board or living down the block, is what I'm saying. We were told that it wasn't clean. And DEQ has got their standards, but they're not... They didn't come to us with a plant right outside of downtown, or right outside of neighborhoods, or right outside of a church, or right outside of a grocery store.
But wouldn't DEQ be an objective criteria? I mean, if we're talking about setting a standard or moving this forward, we've got to agree on what this standard is going to be. Otherwise, we're going to be having these types of meetings for how long? I just respectfully would say that I think DEQ is, wherever it falls, if it's considered safe, How did we dispute that?
I would just add, okay. There still seems to be a lot of smell problems out there, Gretchen, and as my question is Kirkland planning on, we've talked a lot about noise, and we really haven't talked much about the smelling. Are they planning on doing more or less, or are they pretty much maxed out? I don't know whether I'm supposed to ask Scott that or Jane, or refer that to somebody who might be able to ask that question.
Doing more or less?
To rid the vapors, the foul vapors, that I keep hearing about throughout the community.
I don't believe they have any additional plans beyond what the DEQ is requiring them to do. But with them and any other business in the city, we are bound by performance standards, which do cover nuisances that talk about odor, dust, particulate, smoke. And as Mr. Kwan indicated, it's a very difficult thing to prove, as an objectionable smell to one person may not be objectionable to another. Every morning I can come in and I can smell bacon and eggs across the street. If you don't like bacon and eggs, it might be objectionable. So proving that.
The vegetarian's not going to like your job.
So proving that may be difficult. Okay. So the odor is there. I've noticed it. Whether or not it raises lumps to an objectionable standard, that's something that would be up to, some kind of a testing system that would have to be evaluated and be very difficult.
I think that's one of the items on the list, so it is a violation until proven otherwise, in my opinion. It's listed as an issue, and it hasn't been resolved, so in my eyes, it's a violation at this time. Could it be resolved? Absolutely. Once the findings are in, it erases it. That indeed is what it is.
Well, the DEQ did present this to the committee, I think, when they asked questions about what the limits were for particulate matter and for the volatile organic compounds, Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding that when they did the stat test, that the preliminaries on the VOCs were that they were within limits. But we don't know anything about the particulate, whether the particulate matter is within limits. Maybe we'll find that out when the final report comes in. But it's interesting that the VOC standards that are listed, here's the standard where they do not expect more than one additional cancer risk in 1 million people, or one additional cancer risk in 100,000 people. So they sort of have pretty intensely defined limits here on what they say is an okay limit for their VOCs. Now, we can disagree whether we see 1 in 100,000 is okay or 1 in 100,000 is not okay, but at least they've defined what they think is an acceptable limit.
Explanation, a path forward.
Okay.
I think the company is willing to try to meet any standard as long as it is an objective standard. I'm troubled, and please get your lawyer involved. Because what you're going to find out is, number one, that the conditions are the standard, okay? The conditions themselves. Not everything else, not the narrative, not the comments, the conditions are the standard. Secondly, with respect to air quality issues, you're absolutely right. There's actually case law from the Supreme Court that says that, once again, don't take my word for it, talk to your lawyer, but there's direct case law that says that with respect to air quality issues, the MDEQ has exclusive preemptive jurisdiction. So unless it violates a local nuisance standard, and once again, you do have a general nuisance ordinance, but with respect to all of the other things that you talked about, particulate, opacity, VOCs, those are all things for which there is a very specific standard in the Air Pollution Control Act, and that is what the DEQ evaluates it by. And there was an opacity test in June, which the plant clearly passed at full operation. So you know, what we'll certainly, whatever the DEQ says, I think that's a standard we have to live by. And as far as a pathway forward, what I would, you know, once again, you have to do whatever you think is best, but it seems to us what we're looking for is an objective-based standard, not something that's, well, I thought it was offensive or I didn't like it. You know, what you need is you need to have your consultant talk to our consultants, and then those groups, the real professionals, you know, come up with what is an objective criteria that can be measured, that can be established, and that way, you know, you're not in this position where you have to basically look at, you know, 50 angry people and say, well, I think you're wrong, because who's right and who's wrong is really based in the eye of the beholder, you know, and what you really need is some objective criteria. Even with respect to odor, there are some olfactory analysis that will allow you to evaluate that. Now, it's a little more subjective, you know, than noise, because noise has a very specific, you know, wavelength that you measure to determine whether or not there are impacts that are unacceptable. But once again, it's something that you can sit down and you can say, okay, let's come up with a criteria that is objective and reasonably based. And the plant, the company is not looking for a fight. You know, they're looking for a way through this problem with you. And what they want to do is find some way, once again, you know, but it frightens me when I hear words like, well, you know, we have to make it better for everybody. Well, what does that mean? You know, that's our problem, is what does that mean? And my strong recommendation is that you basically, you know, think about this, think about what the mechanisms are, the pathway forward, and how you establish that objective criteria. And once again, I would strongly recommend that you get your counsel involved, because I think that they can help you determine what those appropriate mechanisms are to establish objective criteria.
Jared, could I give us a response to Scott on that? As far as, I think we have some pretty objectable, or some very black and white items here that we can rule on.
I would agree. I believe the conditions, conditional use permit is pretty clear. And disagree that the zoning permit was issued without conditions. That zoning permit was issued to be in compliance with all the original approval and all amendments to that plan. That was the condition. And if you look on the final item of our conditional use, it indicates the standards met with the condition that final development plan is approved. To me, that means that conditional use is tied directly to that plan. And in that plan, they indicated a number of things that in my opinion, they're not in compliance with. So I think you need to identify, you know, whether or not in compliance and make that finding. And then if they are in compliance, then fine. If they're not in compliance, then you move to the second step of what you're going to do. And what I'm hearing from this board is that you want to continue to work with them. Herlin has been upfront and cooperative through this entire process, and I think we need to give them the benefit for their efforts. They have been a willing participant in the citizen committee. They have taken proactive measures. So I think to give them the benefit to continue on that path is the right way to go. But I still think you need to recognize that they made obligations. They admitted that things didn't work out the way they said. How can we move on? Does the Planning Commission need to look back at the permit and adjust it and work with them to find an objective standard that we can live with as a community?
One question, if we open that back up to make an adjustment, is that something both parties need to agree to?
Absolutely. Any amendment to an approved plan has to be a mutual agreement between the parties.
And that, you know, that sounds absolutely correct. I was just wondering.
Um, So, can we just say, based on what we've heard, we believe that the conditions have not been met, or do we need to go through those step by step?
I referred it back to you for some specific reasons. You can,
yep,
you can agree with those, you can disagree with those, you can add to them, whatever you want, but I would use that as a starting point. And then, once you make a finding, move on to what you're going to do about it.
So, Scott's reasons were listed on the next to the last page of his report to us, the bottom three paragraphs. The following reasons, representations and information provided by Kirtland Products to the Planning Commission in regards to the impacts of the plant on which the approval of the conditional use permit was considered were incomplete and or inaccurate. Sound produced by the plant exceeds levels presented to the Planning Commission. The sound abatement and landscaping measures as proposed by Kirtland and approved for the conditional use final plan have not been completed, as all equipment exceeding 40 decibels was not placed inside the building, and landscaping as shown and described on the final approved development plan has not been installed.
Excuse me, did I address that?
You guys also mentioned the smokestack, which you just read. I missed that.
That's not it.
Is that one of the items that I looked at?
The emissions or the smokestack itself?
Odors are such nuisance. Oh. It's one of the items, it's number 10. It describes that specifically in this.
Are there three things that we want to continue to consider into the future? The noise, the odor, and the landscaping.
And I think the mechanical equipment, that's part of the noise, but there is an item Q that talks about equipment specifically.
I think that was just screening of the mechanical equipment, that's all.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about, Joe?
It's usually like screening HVAC.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
The noise part of number 10 is probably what Scott has already put down here as his third item. So, I mean, if you wanted to make a motion to add a fourth item, you know, that talked to the comment that the DEQ and EPA must approve air emissions, you know, as an additional item. I guess you could make a motion to that effect and just to add it to this, to these three paragraphs at the bottom of the page here. And it is one of the items in the conditional use permit.
I think there's been a difference in the discussion between emissions and odor.
Oh, that's two different things.
Correct. Is that wrong?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does the DEQ have standards for odor?
Or does Boyne City have an ordinance on odor?
Like I indicated before,
it's in the nuisance.
There's a general nuisance ordinance that talks about all these things that they are under and all of the businesses.
Okay. So, is there any more discussion? I'm looking for a motion.
I have a clarification question. So the process is you would be looking for a motion that up or down that they've met or don't meet the conditional use permit. If that's the finding, is there a second motion on recommendations to rectify that, or is it an all or nothing, they don't meet it, it's revoked?
I would do it in two parts. The first one is just a finding whether or not you believe they're in compliance with the conditional use permit. The second part would be whatever action you want to take based on that finding. Now, if you find them non-compliant, that doesn't mean you need to terminate your permit. You can give them time like they've requested to work on it and maybe find some objectionable standards and work together to find a solution, or you can determine that you don't want to go down that path. So.
Who sets the time?
Thank you.
This board.
So we do 30, 60, 90, 2 years.
I would recommend 2 years.
No.
I didn't think that'd fly.
So you're looking for a motion? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes. The first motion would be whether they're in compliance.
And are you going to specify the items, or just simply they're not in compliance?
Nothing makes the motion.
Well, I want to do it correctly and once, not in compliance.
I would be as specific as possible.
Okay.
I have even used three things that I think.
Right.
But if you want to elaborate on those, feel free. If you want to add, delete, feel free. But I would be very specific in the findings of what they're doing.
Right. And I think the ones that you read, Jane, those several or three items, I believe those are the ones that I have the most concern with, that they're not in compliant, and you want to read them to me quick, then I'll put it in a motion, or can you?
Well,
okay.
I thought I added odor. You had three before that.
Okay.
I had noise, odor, and landscaping.
Okay. Sound produced, that's one of the items. I'd like to make a motion that the sound is one of the items that they're not compliant with. Sound abatement. The second item would be the landscaping. And what was the third one?
Odor.
Well, can we tie the odor and the emissions into one? I mean, that's going to be all in one report. And I think that was one of the items. Because it's all coming from the same place.
Let's just be specific about all four.
All right. The emissions and the odor, the fourth item. I think those are the items that they're not compliant in my opinion. And I'd like to make a motion that we accept that.
Jim, if I may.
Sure.
Under noise, could you be more specific in your motion to say that specifically all equipment exceeding 40 decibels was not is not placed inside?
I think that's all part of it. I mean, as we talk, it's all generating the noise. It would be an additional item because the noise from whatever's causing it, and no one at this time, or I don't know what specific piece is resonating that noise that's causing the noise issue. We could add that into the noise part of it, that it's from the factory and or the equipment. Because I don't know which one's doing it, but now they're not in compliance, whichever's causing that issue. Is that too much words?
No, I have no problem adding that, but I think it needs to be mentioned.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Yep, I agree. I agree.
I guess part of it was because what they represented to us was that
40 okay.
would be enclosed.
Right.
Placed inside the building.
Okay. And I agree with that.
Yeah. You said a verbal no, they have a number.
Okay.
Everyone understand the motion? All right. Pat, roll call.
Okay, I've got a motion, but I don't have a second yet.
Good point. You can second it if you want a discussion.
Yes. Should we consider including a point related to the health and welfare of the community to give us an opportunity to possibly garner more information or at least have the option if more information came to us to consider about the particulate emissions? Because I think what if we... Again, I think we want to be objective, but I think there's value to some subjectivity that has come out. I'm not trying to be too contradictory with that. But if we are defining they're not in compliance with specific things, we have to realize if all these get checked off, then that is, you know, the approval goes ahead, is what I'm thinking. So I want to make sure that we're all clear that it's just these three points. If we're specifying these and
something else comes up,
they're reached, that's pretty much a done deal.
Right, and I would expect that would be because they met the conditions.
So that is my only thought on one. I don't know, to discuss or consider an additional point with regards to health and welfare, considering information related to property values and things like that that are subjective, that we've talked about, that we may receive more information one way or the other, but at least that we have that point to leverage one way or the other. Just a thought to discuss, not to tie our hands with just the three specifics that were mentioned in the motion.
But if they address noise, odor, landscaping, and emissions,
and I think the other is still a condition. If you can prove that that's what's causing the values to go down, but once these are resolved, I don't know that that would be an issue. But again, that's speculation on my part.
Pat, could you just read back the motion then, as you have it noted?
Okay. I have it noted as Kirtland is not in compliance with the conditional use permit issued based on the three factors of sound produced by the plant exceeds levels represented to the Planning Commission, sound abatement and landscaping measures as proposed by Kirtland and approved for the conditional use final site plan have not been completed as all equipment exceeding the 40 decibels was not placed inside the building. And then again, the landscaping as shown and described in the final approved development plan has not been installed, and concerns regarding odors and emissions. And seconded by George.
On that very last couple of words that you had, I would suggest, you know, that maybe you think about, instead of those words, just in putting in some of the words that are actually in item 10 of the conditional use permit, by simply saying,
and concerns on the public health, safety, or welfare by reason of excessive production of traffic, noise, smoke, odors, or other such instances. And just, and that, you know, just gives you everything.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Kozlowski?
Yes.
McKenzie?
Yes.
McCann?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
St. Dennis?
Yes.
Crum?
No.
Elwinger?
Yes.
Frost?
Yes.
Step one. So we have found them not in compliance. What is our next step?
Well, we can make a motion to extend or allow them an amount of time to comply. Is that correct?
Yes.
You know, and I know we have to do it basically amongst ourselves. My understanding is phase one is implemented, and we have phase two, or the finalization of what they're going to do, is near, but I don't know their time frame. And again, that shouldn't matter, but when do we know when the test results are coming in for the emissions? Does anyone know that?
Perhaps you can ask a couple.
Do you?
They expect them within 2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks. Like I indicated, phase one you indicate is completed. You have another phase to try to address the rest of these items. Is that correct, or?
Well, what we're looking to have done is to take the work that we've already done and evaluate what impact that's had on the noise, and then to come up with some objective criteria that we can use to determine what needs to be done next, so that we can work towards those goals.
Okay. Some of the things in the same places and take another monitoring. I mean, take right. Well, I want to give them sufficient time, but yet not stretch it out so far that it doesn't get captured. That's what I'm looking for.
But sufficient time to accomplish what standard? That's the problem. Is that you're saying make it better? Okay, right. Well, make it better by what objective standard? You have to give us something objective that says here's what you have to meet. And some of the things that you've mentioned, the outside fans, that are over 40 decibels, we can't put them indoors. Their whole purpose is to be exhaust fans outside.
Excuse me, wasn't the conditional permit objective enough, sir?
It's objectively stated specific things. This is a public hearing, then.
Okay, well, if he can talk, can I speak?
We asked.
Okay.
No,
objectively,
no, you may not speak.
Your permit has objectively stated certain items that have not been met, period.
I would ask the audience to refrain from speaking unless they're recognized by the board. So just more time does not do it.
I said something different than what you agreed upon. I know initially they agreed upon 25 decibels, but is that correct? 24.
Let us work on it a little bit.
So what I'm trying to define or help is to set some type of limit that you can or should achieve according to the standards. And if they specifically say noise to it says 24 decibels at the property line. Now,
I'm not going to alter anything that was decided or agreed upon. I'm looking at simply the items that were, you know, in the permit. And it clearly says 24 decibels. You know, I don't know, and I guess I shouldn't say anything. I'm going to stick with the facts that are presented in front of me. That was one of the items that we talked about, you know, the noise. The emissions, like you indicated, and that's a good point, the EPA or the DEQ sets a standard, and the city has an ordinance which you have to abide by. I would think that's your standards. That's me talking. Because now it's identified, and we can research that a little bit more. I mean, make sure that we are covering exactly the language that they have to abide by. Now, you're saying Boyne City has an ordinance they have to abide by. There's a standard right there. And the DEQ, they have standards, and I guess we could maybe get with the local attorney or whatever, make sure those are the limits, and then transfer that to the Kirtland folks. Does that sound right or no?
Well, no, not exactly.
Just a minute.
No? Okay.
Let's hear from this end of the table.
All right.
Okay. There is no decibel limit.
No, I'm not talking about the
there's
noise.
There's no objective standard in the town. So, but I can understand, appreciate their position is they need to be able to measure to some standard, you know. So, you know, my suggestion would be that you know, Boyne City and Kirtland get together and to try to come up with some kind of a standard. Maybe the Citizens Committee should be very much involved in that. You know, the RSG report suggested, I think, 40 decibels. You know, in my view, that's pretty harsh. And that they may even hit 35 at night because, a lot of the cities that do have noise limits, definable noise limits, are roughly 50 or 55 decibels at night, especially for tonal, for things like motors that run. But I appreciate their position. They really need to have something to shoot for, you know. And it seemed to me like they ought to be shooting for a decibel limit, and they also ought to be shooting for mitigating the low frequency stuff. And it may take concrete barriers to mitigate the low frequency stuff. And the question is, are they willing or have the funding to do that? You know, it's but if we're going to make it, you know, good for our people in this town, we're probably going to have to do something like that, you know. So I don't know, is that possible, Scott, that the city and they could well, work to something?
They do want to do a reevaluation after they complete all the Kodiak Group improvements, correct?
Right.
And once that's done, I think they can come back to the city and say, this is what we have. And then if they want, they can propose to the Planning Commission, you found them not in compliance with their approval, a proposal to amend their plan or to bring it into compliance. And if that's agreed on between these two parties and they reach that. So I would say, you know, right now, send it back to them to do that evaluation. Meet with the city to tell us where they are, and then, you know, maybe with the Citizens Committee or maybe with this body, we can determine what an objectionable standard that they should meet, and then from that.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, the 24 decibel thing is pretty much probably impossible to meet. I mean, it really is. I mean, they probably didn't understand what they were saying when they said that originally. And that's okay, you know. We need to come up with something. You know, I'm thinking about maybe a motion that would say we'd give them, you know, 30 days that we could, you know, to get a discussion going about, what might be possible, and maybe 60 days to evaluate it. Yeah, I you know.
I would want to be more specific about looking at these two.
The 125 and the 250?
Yeah, whatever those are called, octave bands.
Frequent hertz.
Yeah. Hertz, there you go. Specifically looking at reducing those and overall noise level to 40 or less.
And or 40 or 45 or 50.
And it sounds like the pulsation might have changed, but it's still there somehow. I don't.
If there's a pulsation or a hum, typical noise standards say that they have to take a 5 decibel reduction in the allowable limit if it's like a hum.
But I'd like them to continue to try to.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you down here. The room's too big.
Sorry. So, Joe.
Yeah.
The standard, looking for some objective criteria or standards to work with their own consultant at how to reduce the 125 and the 250 and overall noise to under 40, and then also keep working on that tonal pulsation. It sounds like it's worked in some areas of town, but other areas it's turned into a helicopter sound.
Or the kid coming by with a jam boombox in a trunk that can shake your house.
That's the 125 and the 250.
And then for a lot of people, doesn't seem to believe.
Scott, if I may add, I kind of agree with you. What's going to happen, I'm sure, is that they are going to meet with their lawyer. They're going to counter back with our staff and or lawyers, and they're going to say some of this stuff's not practical to put inside for this reason. Some of this stuff is not going to work, and we're going to say, but that's what you promised us. So there has to be, what's going to happen, I agree with what you said, is some negotiations, but the bottom line is that it has to work. The negotiations have to come out in the city's favor. And at that point, yes, there will be, you know, if they say, I can't put this one machine inside, or I can't decouple this machine because of this, and we'll say, but as long as you solve the problem of the noise, and then that gets back to the World Health Organization is what was recommended by RSG, and maybe we need to look at World Health Organization standards, which is 40 decibels daylight, is that correct?
At night.
40 at night, at not at the property line, but at the receiving place, and that would be from across the river at Heisler's place to on top of Avalanche at Coon's place to Jones's house above. I mean, so it is going to be a process that we have to work through. It's not black and white. Am I kind of correct in that assumption?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's going to take some time, again, with the emphasis that we come out favorable. So I'm not sure. You know, I don't mind setting report back to us in 30 days, report with 60 days, construction started on A, B, and C. I don't know. I'm looking for your recommendation, but I don't see it as being black and white. I see this as a process for the next 30 days, 60 days of communication, negotiation, cost analysis, and data, recording data. Am I correct?
I think to do the evaluation and then to get a third party in to do any kind of analysis is going to take time. I think 30 days would be the absolute minimum, and I think it would be more practical for that.
So our neighbors have to listen for another 60 days?
Well, the other option is you could put some limits on times of operation during the next 60 days, you know, instead of, you know, 24 hours, you know, I mean, 7 in the morning to 7 at night or something like that, you know, to give them somewhat a break till we can confirm that the sound levels are truly down to what we expect them to be.
Okay.
restrictions were there, and it was that.
They were under no restrictions. They were self-imposed hours of operation to alleviate some of the problems, but we had no ability to tell them what they could do.
We don't?
No, we do.
Or we
you
do now?
Do.
We do. Okay, okay.
But I, as a staff person in the city commission, didn't have that, but they made those requests, and they worked with those requests.
Yeah, I ask a quick question. In one of the overviews, and I think they indicated that some of the mechanical work or engineering work is 90% complete, going to be finished maybe in 2 weeks. What's the anticipated decibel level when that's completed? I don't think I ever heard that number.
I don't think that's anticipated. I think there was a reevaluation that was going to take place.
But is there a model that when all of these things were being done, that this is where you expected to be with those modifications?
Go ahead. The intent of those modifications were the number one issue that RSG had. It wasn't a noise level reduction, it was getting rid of the pulsation. And so we worked on the air conveyance system in order to get rid of that pulsation was the goal. It had nothing to do with a decibel level drop necessarily, but it was trying to fix that number one issue that RSG saw offensive to the community. And we're 90% complete with that. And there's one piece of equipment that we're finishing up this week, and we'll be done with it this week. And then there needs to be an evaluation of the pulsation and whether or not that's been eliminated.
So your consultant's going to come back and evaluate that pulsation, or how is that evaluation done?
Well, so far it's been done by going around the community and listening to the noise levels and whether you can distinguish. That pulsation was a fingerprint that allowed people to know that that's Kirkland that's running. And now it's an evaluation of can you still distinguish the Kirkland sound, or is it the same as other sounds within the industrial park?
Scott, do you think it would be beneficial while the applicant is waiting for the data that we will review, is to meet with our attorney just to get a feel on how we might word something related to what we just passed on their non-compliancy and how they would have to address those issues? Because I don't know how qualified we are to set out a motion right now. I think I would like to have counsel and you review how we should word something, get your recommendation, along with other information possibly from engineers or some of the other measurements that occurred, just so we can be clear when we say this is what you have to meet, that we know that will hold up if they do meet it, and that we agree with it. And we could probably do that in 30 days. And I think we're all in agreement. We want to get the results of DEQ. We want to get the results of the measurements after what they've done so far. Have those in 30 days, then get information back from you on, okay, now how do we propose this, or have more of a firm understanding on how we move forward or continue to get.
That's a good idea.
Did you want to put that in motion?
Do we need to do anything
Yeah, you have to give them some time, otherwise they can't do anything.
But I think that the other very valid comment was, you know, looking, so they're not in compliance, there are issues, and it's causing, you know, it's disrupting the community. Should we discuss whatever time period we put to limit hours of operation to give somewhat of a break? Are we able to do that, or what are some thoughts? I thought that was I think it's a valid comment to discuss, recommendation.
Kerman, do you have any thoughts on that? Is there anything that you think you could do in the next 30 days, you know, to that could fit in your plan?
Well, certainly restricting hours at this point in time of our season has severe economic implications to the business. We've continued since the beginning to provide accommodations, recognizing or hoping that we would be through all of the necessary modifications required before the start of our season. But now that the season that is foundation of our business is upon us, it puts us in a position where it puts us at severe fiscal risk. And I might add it's hard for me to get a sense as to the level of concerns registered by the community since we've made the application. Certainly we've heard from a few people, but we've heard from a number of people who have a different view. So I'm concerned as to how do you, in fact, cut the baby, so to speak. And that concerns us because it has severe financial implications on the business.
Well, in 30 more days, you're going to be able to get 2 or 3 weeks of community feedback, and you're going to have the results of the final report from the DEQ. You'll be a week or two into that.
Yeah, the DEQ issue, is, as far as we're concerned, is not an issue. We believe we will be well within the permitted level of DEQ standards. Our concern is limiting our operation. When we do not operate around the clock, we operate inefficiently, extremely inefficiently. And that inefficient continues to create a financial burden on the business at a time
and
where
equipment.
Equipment
is designed to run around the clock. It's got refractory in it and needs to heat up and heat sink in order to efficiently use the dryer. When you start it up and shut it down, you get expansion and contraction. And the equipment manufacturer doesn't recommend starting and shutting it down. You need to start it up and then shut it down when you're shutting down.
But I don't think you should be operating around the clock until you're in compliance with the conditional use permit. It's my position.
Right.
Looking for something where we can meet partway here.
Limiting our days might be an option that we could take a look at as opposed to limiting our hours. At least we could run continuously until we shut down. That might be something we could look at.
Yes, but again, you look at what they're producing and why it is an impact.
Well, could you operate 3 days a week and be happy or not? I know you're not going to be happy,
I don't know. That's something we'd have to talk about, I guess. I'd rather operate 3 days, 24 hours, than to be limited to hours 5 days a week and starting up and shutting down the equipment.
Okay.
We don't have any maintenance situations where we'd have to shut the equipment down for a period and
Yeah, we have one day a week that we schedule.
And actually, the DEQ would tell you that you actually have your worst emissions output when you are starting up and shutting down.
That's true.
So if you're starting up and shutting down every 24 hours, you're actually exacerbating the emission issue.
Okay. I guess we don't know what those, where those emissions would be compared to what the DEQ just did with the 24, running 24 hours at a time.
I would recommend that you call Janice Denman or Kurt Childs at the DEQ in Cadillac and
they would
just ask them.
Okay.
Because there are specific standards. There's what's called the startup shutdown malfunction rules under the Air Pollution Control Act that deal with the fact that you do have significant emission variances, you know, while getting a piece of equipment.
How long have you been running 24 hours?
We started last Thursday and Friday, the week before last, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday we ran 24 hours up until Thursday at 2:30, I believe it was, after the stack testing was complete and shut down. We started up last week, we started up at 6 o'clock on the week before last, we started at 6 o'clock on Thursday and ran through Saturday morning. And then this past week, we started up 6 o'clock on Monday and shut down at 2:30 on Thursday. We're finishing that up this week.
This week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's when we get good results from that.
We all hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're looking for some objective standard
we're
by which.
We're trying to get help from people get some sleep.
Right, right. Yeah, I understand.
Accomplished within that time frame. It doesn't have to be everything, but if we give them 30 days, what do we want back? Or in 60 days, what do we want to accomplish? I believe
they're after 30 days, I mean, they're putting in another set of equipment. Get a reading in 30 days, plus take a look at it, monitor the sound. And then after 60 days, we have to come to some conclusion. We can't drag this out.
The process that they're working on right now, the noise issue is just the tonal pulsation. It's not meant to reduce overall noise or deal with that lower sound.
Correct. Well, we believe it may be dealing with that lower sound.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, would we get ours? RSG to come back, or are there other less expensive localer guys? Or do we stick with the expert we've been using?
I think an expert, you know, as long as they're qualified, you know, have to be RSG, but I do think we need that independent analysis.
But then come back in 30 days or 60 days, make two evaluations?
That's
the main the people.
Supporting criteria.
Experience and have all the expertise.
Well, health organization. We don't have a computer.
Is there any potential for you to run so long, like maybe 10, 11 o'clock, and disband for several hours? That doesn't work.
So they start up such a mess.
car runs a little dirty when you first start it up.
Well, I'm just trying to, because I don't know their process, if there's some opportunities there.
Like all those short trips in the car.
Well,
is it our, on a different topic, is it our responsibility to make these tests for decibel, or is it their responsibility? How does that work?
The city, you know, did fund the RSG study, almost $50,000. In my opinion, you know, they should bear some responsibility for the cost to evaluate that. But I think we need to have input on who does that. So.
I thought the cost was $15,000. You said 50. You say
50.
15.
25. 25.
Yeah, well, I still think that there should ought to be some, maybe we ought to look at it for 30 days, and in the next 30 days, we probably ought to get with the city lawyer to find out what we can, you know, what we can recommend in terms of a negotiation between the two. As Chris was mentioning, but I would propose a motion that, you know.
Can you say it louder?
I would propose a motion that, you know, that in the next 30 days, with the Planning Commission and or city meet with the city lawyer to determine what we can do to try to create a negotiating environment that, as Tom said, that would put us in a good position to come up, maybe try to come up with some objective standards. And in the meantime, I would say try to limit, you know, 3 days of running 24 hours a day. I mean, it gives you 72 hours of run time. You know, 7 in the morning to 7 at night, 5 days a week, gives you 60 hours of run time, and not as efficient as what you want. And the community will do, you know, and we should know in 30 days whether we got much of this sound stuff solved. Right, and if not, you know, then we're going to have to you know, get back into, are we moving equipment inside, are we building decoupling buildings, are we putting up concrete walls, or what are we going to do to get it down to an acceptable level? So I would recommend, I'd like to propose a motion that we ask Kirtland to only run, you know, 3 days a week for the next 30 days, and let's see where we go from there.
I'll second it.
Then to come back to this body in 30 days?
Yeah, well, we're going to meet in 30 days anyway, right? I mean, whatever the next regularly scheduled meeting of the Planning Commission is, which is approximately 30 days.
Any other discussion on that motion?
McCann?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
St. Dennis?
Yes.
Crum?
No.
Elwanger?
Yes.
Fraz?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
Yes.
McKenzie?
Yes.
Gave 30 days before we found that map.
3 days, 24 hours.
For 3 days, three continuous days, 24 hours. In 3 days, they'll have their stack test. Stuff, all of that stuff.
I have a letter from Derek.
Anyone who has received anything from the guys, just submit to my office.
Okay.
We'll go through whether the duplicate is on the law and make all that perfect.
Yeah, funnel it through him.
If you received any letters or anything, give them to Scott so he can make sure they're a part of the record, even if they might, if they're duplicates, he'll, you know, weed through them.
I got a bunch of letters. Everybody did, I bet.
For you?
Everybody got the same thing. I think they're already up there.
But he said to...
Yeah, funnel them through his office and
Scott,
then we'll go.
Here's the copies of the letters I got, but I would like to have them back. And once you check, make sure that,
okay,
you know, if they're all duplicates, I think if everybody probably got pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
Just jot my name down on this.
Yeah.
It says John on it.
Yep.
That's right.
Okay, item number 8, staff report.
There is one item that has come to our attention recently. Larry Sullivan, the county planner, is retiring effective the end of September. The county commission is looking at possibly eliminating that position. I do have some concerns about that, and other communities as well have concerns about that. I believe the intent is that is the assistant Kirsten would be put into that role to still function as staff support for the planning commission. But to eliminate that position entirely, I think should be thought about. Maybe there is some debate about whether or not a contracted position or a full-time position based on cost savings. I think that's a good debate to have, but to eliminate it completely, eliminate the funding completely, I think I wouldn't agree with that. So, but I know some of the other communities are taking position on this. So I'm bringing it to you to give your input on it, and if you want to make any kind of recommendation or motion in any regard to that, you can do so.
They did send me a letter exactly what you just stated.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked for any comments back. But, you know, I guess they indicated, they being whoever wrote the letter, that they were eliminating that job and this other person was taken over with an increase in pay, and that's basically the gist of the letter. And whether we agree with it or not, I think they were looking for comments.
I didn't go to the county commissioner meeting. It was not fun to attend, but is the budget process completed for Charlevoix County? I mean, at this point, would it matter?
I don't think it's like May or September when they were going to end their budget hearing.
Okay. Because it's my understanding that at the last meeting they actually voted not to, they did eliminate the position. I don't know if that's a matter of fact. And
that's my opinion.
And is the budget approved or it was a tentative and it gets finalized at the end of this month and they did not allocate additional funds?
I don't know.
In fact, I think they reduced it.
Yeah, because that's what the letter indicated.
So there was action after that letter.
Oh.
I didn't go to the meeting, and I was trying to look at the minutes, but that was my understanding.
I don't know.
It's too late to comment.
I don't think it's ever too late to make a comment regarding that.
I know our representative is against it.
Against
Chris.
The position or the
position?
He's for the cut.
He's for the cut.
I talked to him at length and agreed to disagree. And he says, well, if we find that we need it, we'll add it back in. Well, that's not necessarily true, and I don't think they appreciate the importance of planning.
Right.
And I think planning is the first step to getting grants. And on and on and on. I would very much be in support of a letter of recommend or letter of support from us, supporting the need for full-time planner and staff at the county level.
I agree with Tom. There's been so many forward motion and I mean, there's an economic reality, but I think that the cost could be devastating without having the right people to assist this county.
I was going to speak up. I don't know what Larry really does. I kind of know what Scott does, and he's way underpaid. Brother, you know. I mean, you should see Larry on the bike trail or something. Or, that's really about all I know. You know, I'm going to call Danny and say, you know, it's worth. But Gretchen seeing something down there with the step one of your grant approval system. Okay, you got to have your ducks lined. Whether you do your parks, your bike trails, you better have this all this paperwork done way ahead of time, which is one reason why we. One of them.
A person like Larry Sullivan, if you get somebody, he can really, I mean, he pulled it all together. That's what a good county planner does.
I really don't know what he does. That's what I'm asking.
Well, there are some statutory things that the County Planning Commission required to do, and he asked his staff support for that. You know, any ordinance amendment, text amendment, anything that goes through the townships is required to be through the county and review. Any master plan, recreation plan, any kind of plan like that in the townships is required to go through the county for review. So
without someone with experience there and knowledge and skills and abilities. The review is,
It's whether or not
minimal.
I think there's a debate to be had whether a full-time position is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the position is necessary. Yeah. And when I was at NEMCOG, I served in a similar role for Alpena County, and
I told you it was. No, you say a full-time. How would you do with just a part-time? Recorded time.
Well, I think that's a debate for the commission, the county commission to have, whether or not, but I still think there's a role for that position. You know, whether or not, it's justified to be a full-time person, I don't know, but I do think there is a role for that person. Mm-hmm.
So do you want to tell Mike now that he's underpaid?
Yes, because of how underpaid Scott is. I am too, by the way. Yeah, sure you are.
It's best not to comment at all.
Okay. I can understand a little bit more what we're talking about in his position.
Is everyone in support of a letter from the board?
Sure.
In support of retaining that position at some level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's part-time. It's affordable, but necessary.
Right.
Could that kind of a position easily be done on a contract basis, or would that be...
Yes, I've done that.
You did that at NEMCOG.
Yeah, I did that at NEMCOG for a county, so it is possible to contract that out, sure.
And ARCOG has planners and,
Is that letter, can you write that letter, Scott?
I get the gist of it that the Planning Commission is supportive of maintaining that position and it should continue to fund it and at some level. What the appropriate level is, I don't know, but
well put.
I think the comment related to being better suited to receive grants and that financial aspect is really important because there's a value add there.
If you don't have your master plan, you can't apply for a grant.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to include that so it's not just so subjective. It's looking at the ROI on it.
Looking at your wallet.
Yeah.
That's all I have for today.
Anything for the good of the order?
Move to adjourn.
It's been 3 hours. Are you ready?
I move to adjourn.